quite an awesome clip. Thank you so much to David Loyal, who provided us with that. That is the Grand Republic Fife and Drum Corps. And here we go with the long-awaited but perfectly timed interview with Dave Loyal, pre-recorded on June 23rd. This is the pre-recorded interview with Dave Loyal, and I hope that you enjoy. I had such a fascinating time talking with this gentleman, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Good morning. I'm speaking with Dave Loyal from Loyal Drums. Are you there, Dave?
Yeah. Hi. It's nice to talk to you this morning.
Thank you. Well, we've been looking forward to getting you on the air for a while, so I'm sure that the audience will appreciate the fascinating things that you're doing out in the world. So, yeah, I'm really grateful also to Hal, who connected us over there on the East Coast. So thank you for joining us. And I'd like to let the listener get a guest-driven interview. So you get to take the driver's seat, and I'll be here to help navigate.
Wonderful. I'm not the most adept at talking about myself, but we'll see how this goes. As you said, my name is Dave Loyal. I'm with the company Loyal Drums. I'm a veteran of the Old Guard Fife and Drum Corps, which is one of the premier bands of the United States Army. And I've been playing fife and drums since I was a child, really 9 or 10 years old, and focusing on it. Ended up joining the Army to do it professionally and served for 12 years. And after that, got out. Now we're launching. We launched our business, and now we build all the ceremonial drums for the U.S. military. So it's been a pretty wild ride.
I imagine so. And those drums are absolutely gorgeous. I've gotten a chance to take a look at your Instagram presence, and they're
sure,
beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, and so one of the main things, one of the main goals for us is to kind of bring the historical element of these instruments, which have been around since the founding of our country, the rope tension snare drums and bass drums, and to really kind of preserve some of that, the Americana, but also the manufacturing techniques that were used back then, and bring things into a modern light, but in a positive way that kind of tips the hat to the tradition of 1776 before that, and, you know, for all the historical time periods for our nation.
Well, that's fascinating. There sounds like you have a niche where you're one of the only people who's doing that.
Yeah, the way that we do things is certainly different from anybody else. There are other makers of instruments and other rope drum makers as well, you know. But as far as building everything by hand and incorporating a lot of more traditional techniques, you know, that's fairly unique to us. Steam bed shells, so the, you know, taken from a slice of tree and steam bending it into shape into a round cylinder and going through all the processes with that from really pure materials. You know, we're not importing components and parts. We're doing 90% of the work in-house. We even smelt our own bronze for some of the parts for these drums. So it's really kind of unique. It's probably not the best business model in the world, but, you know, it follows. It's a niche, as you said, and it's my niche, and it's been able to collect a team of people here that really kind of follow that ideology with you know, just American craftsmanship, doing things in a way that makes sense for the product to be the best possible without outsourcing so much that you've diluted that thought.
Wonderful. And you also were talking, we had a lovely conversation before the interview the other day about how you actually prepare machinery to build things in-house. And so you're not only building drums, but you're building the machines to make the drums.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of the issues that you face when doing something like this is we use a lot of hand tools, but once you start having quantities of maybe, you know, 50 or 80 drums on the workbench for different military bands and civilian groups, you do need to not automate, but have machinery that kind of helps you get there. So preserving the bones of the instrument are you know, done traditionally, but there are many things that you do need machines for. Okay, so then you go down that road, and those machines don't exist because it's such a niche thing. So, you know, I come from a family of engineers. I did not study engineering myself, but I certainly have the mindset, and so that's been a lot of work solving the problems of manufacturing for our niche. And a lot of it comes down to building our own machinery to help us get there.
Yeah. And you have a team of people who are all equally passionate, it sounds like, for the preservation of that history and the forward movement of that, the sharing of that drum and fife gift.
Yeah, there's a lot. So it's interesting. There's a lot of artisans in their own right that work here in the shop. And then there's also, from a different standpoint, a lot of musicians and drummers for the military and civilians that will come to the shop and just kind of want to be around the goings on and have a hand in some different things and maybe learn some about their own instruments so that they're able to bring that knowledge home with them. So, but yeah, there's a lot of artisans here, some with art degrees, one went to luthier school, and so he was a guitar builder, you know. So yeah, it's a nice collection of people with kind of an artisanal mind for things, and so it's really, really helped us get to where we are, and I think it's going to help with our future plans.
Yeah. And when you educate people, or you facilitate people in helping to maintain their drums or perfect their skills with drums, what type of education are you providing when people come to join you?
Well, so from the business standpoint, we do a lot of classes for maintenance. We get a lot of mostly military that will come to the shop for whether it's an afternoon or, you know, even a couple of days, and really get a hands-on, you know, introduction to the general maintenance and optimization of the instrument. It's not something that most, even people who join the military as a drummer, you know, they're fairly varied in their backgrounds, but a lot of it is just, it's modern marching band stuff, you know, drum set, things like that they're playing in their normal bands. Okay, then they're throwing a rope drum because the unit has the traditional rope tension drums, and all the knowledge that they have about tuning their previous instruments kind of goes out the window. So we're working with the Army School of Music to actually get more of that knowledge, kind of teach the teachers kind of approach, so that we're trying to spread that knowledge of proper tuning and maintenance of the instruments throughout the military and also some of the civilian world as well. So yeah, it's not necessarily an uphill battle, but it's certainly a battle that's worth fighting.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it. And it keeps you a very busy man.
Yeah, well, and it's funny because people that come to the shop, I always preface their visit with, it's not for everybody, but you know, if it's for you, then it's really for you. Some people, it's like Disney World here with all the machines going, and you know, even the machines that build the machines. There's a part of the shop that's more of a fab shop, you know, where we're doing welding and grinding metal and CNC work and stuff like that really helps us to build the jigs and machinery that help us to do what we're doing. But I do think it's important to drive home that there are elements that will never be touched by a machine and that can only be done by hand correctly. And that's hugely important to the instrument and also the vision of what we're trying to do to preserve that element of things, you know, the traditional craftsmanship approach.
Yes. And you had, I think you had mentioned that you had started out with making the strapping and then moved on to drums. Is that okay to mention?
Yeah. Well, so that actually happened while I was still active duty in the Army. For the first 5 years of the business, I was still active duty. I served from 2004 until December of 2015. So, yeah, it was in my basement, you know, doing the leather work in the evenings and on weekends. And, but yeah, that really started growing. I've always worked on drums, but as far as taking on the actual full scale production of things, I wanted to do it right. And with being an active duty soldier, you don't have that. I didn't want to do it until I had the time and energy and focus to do it correctly. So I did a lot of restoration work and things like that in those years, but I did want to preserve the taking on of larger elements of it until we had the time. And in 2018, we actually took over part of we became the successor to the Cooperman company for their rope drums. And they had a lot of the military contracts and had been, they started making drums in the 1970s. And we've worked very closely over the years, and we continue to do so now that we've, kind of taken over from them and are working together with the same kind of mentality. Although they're not building the drums anymore, they're still incredibly helpful, whether from a business standpoint, but also the production of these. So having a small team of people that I can reach out to when I'm in a pinch, and say like, hey, what would you do in this situation? And, it takes a village kind of thing.
Absolutely. Well, and before the interview started, there's a clip of your music playing. And we'll play a clip of the type of music that we're talking about after this interview as well, so people have like a handle on what that really sounds like and what that really means.
Yeah, well, and so fife and drum is it's a really fascinating art form. I've been playing since I was a kid, but there's a pretty strong fife and drum community, especially in New England. That's where fife and drum has really thrived for over the decades and centuries, really. But it is really around the country, and a lot of universities are becoming interested in the style of music. It applies to a lot of different drummers and fifers, for that matter. Fife is a little bit different because you have to change your instrumentation. So there's a lot of flute players that will learn fife, and it kind of happens in a different trajectory. But for drummers, it's a very pure rudimental style. So using the building blocks of the rudiments, which every drummer learns in their as the basis for their style, whether it's drum set or percussion, whatever. So it really builds on those building blocks in a very, very interesting way. And it's a fascinating style for sure, and it's actually growing now too. So that's very exciting.
Absolutely. Well, and I think you mentioned that you're really globally known for this. So I'm assuming that that excitement building is just going to bring you more and more joy and experiences to get that message out there.
I may not have used that word, but yeah. So there is kind of a global thing that we're doing with this. Not necessarily. That's more of the stuff that I do as a player, as a musician, and I do travel a lot and teach a lot of foreign military groups and doing clinics in different places in Europe, Singapore. Mostly European kind of. Places. And so yeah, I do still travel and perform. Of course, COVID came around and kind of stopped everything, but I still keep connections with a lot of international drummers and people who are interested in this. I try to share what I can. Somebody once said, it's not ours to keep. So we try to pass on some of the the knowledge that we've gained over the years to people outside of here.
That's a lovely way to put it. And forgive me, I guess my take on it is that you're globally known.
I think, well, yeah, yes. I won't disagree, you know, I think, but, you know, it's not, maybe not my style. I don't think that, you know, like, we certainly have drums all over the world, and, you know, we continue to do that. So I am glad that we've been able to impact bands, whether military or civilian or individual players, you know, fairly far reaching, and we'll see what continues to happen in that front.
Wonderful. Well, I should break in now and let the listeners know, if you're just now tuning in, this is Dave Loyal of Loyal Drums, stationed out in the East Coast, Virginia area, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, just south of DC.
And I'm Holly, and you're listening to KSKQ in the morning. Thank you so much, Dave, for being here and talking with us. I'd love to keep the conversation going a little longer. So let's hear more. What would you like to focus on next?
Well, let's see. So there's a lot of facets with all this. And as you and I talked about before the show, we kind of keep it concise so that we're not going into too many different areas. But, you know, so part of what we're doing is not only historically based instruments. We've brought things into the modern age a bit, and really focused on trying to do it in the right way. But with that also comes the knowledge of the instruments themselves from those time periods. So there's been a good amount of restoration work that we've done on historic instruments. In fact, I'm not a drum hoarder. I try to make that a, you know, something that's very important, to not have too many of these, because they do kind of accumulate after a while. And when people know that you're a historic drum guy, oh, hey, I got this old drum, you know, it's slippery slope. So I try to have examples of different makers from different time periods. And I'm very lucky to have a good collection of drums, a curated collection that ranges the time periods from, you know, the birth of our country all the way to modern day military. So that's exciting for me. And I'd like to get that, not only keep it in the shop, but actually get it out there to kind of, you know, help spread the knowledge of what this is and what impact it's had. These instruments were the radio on the battlefield for a long time. You know, if you didn't have drums, then the army could not communicate. Until, like, you know, the turn of the 20th century, you know, it was like, it's there, the impact that these drums have had on the American military, foreign militaries as well, but, you know, my collection is mostly American instruments, but it's, they have a story to tell.
Do you have a favorite of drums, or do you still have a unicorn that you're looking for out there in the world that you might say, yeah, actually, I would like that drum?
So there are a few unicorns out there, but I have to take the standpoint these days that as long as they're coming from the right person, or the right person's collection, and they're going to somebody else, that person is probably going to make sure that that whoever acquires the drum is somebody who can take care of it. Mm-hmm. So I try not to get in the way of that. Some drums, there are only probably maybe like one or two instruments that like to die for me, you know, that kind of thing, you know, mm-hmm. But yeah, I do try to keep a level head about not getting too passionate about specific instruments, because I think that they will end up in a good home with other collectors and, you know, people that also will get to enjoy them. Drums should be played. And so if somebody collects, you know, 100 drums and they never see the light of day and people don't get to experience them and hear those instruments, I think that that's kind of a disservice to the instrument. That's my personal take. So I try to play these drums and also make some recordings. That's part of a longer project that haven't had quite the bandwidth to finish that yet, but to get these drums, the sound of what they are and what they were and what they, you know, represent, to really, for their story to be told.
Yeah.
So
that's very inspiring. Very impressive.
Thank you. Yeah, but for a favorite, you have to understand that some of these drums come from pretty strange places, and but they're historically significant instruments. One of my favorites is my original American Revolutionary War drum, and I bought that one on eBay, and it was listed as a drum table, and so The entire drum had been painted white with latex house paint, and it had plywood glued and nailed to the top and bottom, and it was somebody's side table. Right.
Wow. For real?
Yeah. The reason I bought it for $75, by the way, was that you could see that underneath that latex paint, you could see the nails in the shell, which nails were always used in the historic drums because the hide glue would separate under moist conditions. So you always had to have nails. But the style of nail was what's called a rosehead nail. And not to get too boring with it, but they really stopped making those nails. The blacksmith, you know, a blacksmith made every single one of those nails, and it kind of went out of style in the late 1700s. So it was worth the $75 to see what we had going on there. And so after about a month and a half of work of trying to take off the latex paint in a sympathetic restoration kind of mindset, we found some triangles that were painted on the hoop that helped us identify it as a militia drum from around that time period. And some people helped me with this. There's no label, so it's hard to say, like, this was made exactly this year. But with all of the things together, you're able to say, okay, this is 1760s to 1770s is the kind of date range that we ended up with for it. Some of them have stories like that, which is fun.
Yes, and I think it's absolutely fascinating, and I'm sure the listener out there is probably wondering how in the world this could be as fascinating as it is in a way, but it really, really does capture a lot of our history. And of course, any views or opinions expressed here are solely that of the host and guest. Don't necessarily represent KSKQ, but I'm fascinated. And I know several listeners who are going to be tuned in who will also be fascinated. And, you know, my son has a drum kit. We are fond of the drum in this house, but not that kind of drum per se, but the actual rock and roll kind of drum kit. But a lot of people who play the drum have an affinity for drum, which is what I found, is that, you know, even those who like to play more of a rock and roll drum kit could still sit down with a djembe or some other kind of, you know, hand drum or a bongo or a conga or something and have kind of the same interaction with the drum, because like you said, it's a rudimentary skill. Is it, do you say, or fundamental skill?
Yeah, that's employed. Rudimental drumming is the term that we use. So not quite rudimentary, but rudimental. It's based off of the rudiments are like the syllables of the music. So there are specific patterns that are played in a, you know, specific way that can be assembled into sentences of music, right? So, which holds true to a lot of the styles of today. You know, it's a little bit different of an approach to the instrument itself. So it's a lot of fun, actually. And you can find some videos on YouTube of Fife and Drum Corps. You know, the Old Guard was the military unit that I served with, you know, and you get to play these instruments on the world stage, which is a really, it's amazing, you know, growing up and convincing my mom to bring me to a fife and drum event in Connecticut, you know, which 5 hours drive, and she would drive me up there. She's amazing. Love you, Mom. But seeing my passion and bringing me up there, and then, you know, fast forward a few years and you're playing at the White House, and it's like, it all kind of comes together, and, you know, the community is very strong, and it's worth doing. It's worth preserving these instruments. It's worth preserving the ideas and spreading them, because, you know, it's really changed people's lives.
Yes. It sounds as though not only through community, but also remembering, kind of hearkening back to what you said about radio, as the drums were the radio on the battlefield. Music is a language, and we've spoken about that often on this show with other other guests who have also brought that to light, that music is a language between the players and the audience, between the players and each other. And it was really fascinating to me that you said that that was basically the communication on the battlefield. And that is outstandingly important to preserve that understanding. And it's a language that everyone understands, kind of like a smile. You know, you don't have to speak the same language, but music is a language that almost everyone can understand.
Yeah, well, and so my wife is a Viper. She's still active duty with the old guard, so we actually serve together. And you know, one of the common things that we always hear is that the fifes are very shrill and that the drums are very loud. And it does put it into that perspective, though, when you think these are instruments of war. You know, they're designed to be heard over cannons and musket fire, you know, so they have to be loud and shrill and, you know, to cut through the din of battle, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, and my parents would take me to Colonial Williamsburg, and we'd see the reenactments happening. And I think back when I was young, I felt the same way, like, wow, they're so loud. But I also love the silver flute. I have a silver flute. I'm not very adept at it. I don't quite have the embouchure to get those high, shrill notes, but I could play a middle C pretty well. So,
well, sure. You know, and you brought up like the reenactment scene with things, and that's certainly a part of it. You know, there's the, but it is a modern instrument as well. So there's several kind of, you know, we're kind of in the middle of several different things, from the historical aspect, from the modern military aspect, and from the modern, you know, individual player or groups of musicians. So, you know, yeah, you could probably break that down. Okay, do you wear a tricorn hat when performing this drum? Yes. Okay, you're probably in this category, right? but and that's the thing, is that it doesn't need to be. The instrument is similar to if you think about an acoustic guitar. Right. The acoustic guitar in some form has been around for 1,000 years, you know, or, and I'm probably completely wrong, it's probably like 1500 or 2000 years, but that instrument is still being used today, and the technology hasn't really changed all that much, you know. And so the rope tension drum, although it doesn't have the lugs and the metal, you know, all as much metal on it, it's all a very simple mechanism of using rope to tension the drum. It's still, it's a modern instrument as well. So whether you're using it in a historic context or in a modern performance context, you know, there's different ways. It's just a tool. It's a tool, and it's the oral tradition and, you know, that comes along with it that kind of makes it into something else. So, you know, it's two sides of the same coin, the instrument itself and then the what you do with it. And that's where things get really interesting.
That is a very good point. One of my favorite bands that I've had the chance to see and also was featured in the movies, in the Monsters University movie, is a band called March 4th out here in the Northwest. And they're very modern marching band. And they perform in a very kind of almost circus way, like kind of, it's really almost hard to describe. I mean, they have so many components going, but they're very modern, and to the point where they are featured in Monsters University, you know, so their tune Gospel is in Monsters University. And there's no way that I would relate that until you said it just now. The fact that those instruments are the same instruments that you're talking about, but you're seeing them in way more of a modern context. And I think you're right. A lot of people, including myself, might not put that together or might discredit the separate them, which I'm really glad that you shared that, because I'm going to listen to March 4th a lot differently the next time I see them.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting as well because, people will associate it with the American Civil War or the American Revolution, but there are fife and drum players that have been playing all their life that have never worn a tricorn hat in their life, you know, and like they probably wouldn't put it on. They're like, no, that's weird, you know.
Yeah.
Like, so I mean, there's different contexts for all the things, but using the tools and the tradition itself of the music, and there's some pretty amazing musicians that are in the style of music. And we actually, for a podcast that I'm one of the hosts of, we interviewed Sarah McCunniff and Jim McCunniff the other day, and they're getting ready with their Fife and Drum Corps, Middlesex County Volunteers, they're getting ready to do a 4th of July presentation with Boston Pops. You know, I mean, it's not just this little pocket of things. There are tendrils that spread out to all kinds of different music styles and, you know, different places, which is exciting, and it's good to see. So I'm excited to see where these drums will turn up in the future. I want to be surprised.
I was just about to ask you, like, where do you see the future of this style of drum going? Or yeah, where do you see it going? But you just kind of answered the question. You're excited to see.
Sort of. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of room for growth with this. So we're coming up on the semi-quincentennial. I had to learn that word, but that's the 250th anniversary of our country. It's in just a few years here. And so in 1776, during the bicentennial, we had, you know, there was a huge influx of fife and drum corps, and, you know, the style of music was certainly at a peak. I don't think the peak, but a peak at that time. So, you know, as we're coming up on that, to be able to get the knowledge out there of the instruments and what you can do with them, you know, that's the room where there's places to grow. Universities, schools, high schools, getting away from some of the marching band elements. You know, I have a personal opinion that although the music programs in schools are amazing, they're really good, and they're better than they've ever been in a lot of ways, but in the marching band world, there's kind of an end state to that. And that's once you graduate from high school, your high school marching band, or college, if you play in your college marching band, what do you do after that? You know, there are marching bands for people in, you know, not in a school setting, but they're kind of few and far between, or they fall into some different kind of, you know, of their own environments, right?
Yeah.
Fife and drum is something that you can do for your entire life. You know, at some of the events up in Connecticut, I'm going to one in a few weeks called the Deep River Ancient Muster in Deep River, Connecticut. And you can play with somebody. You can have a 12-year-old kid on one side and, you know, a 70-year-old person on the other side, you know, and you guys have never met before, but you can play music together. So it's really a lifelong style of music that, you know, even if you've never met before, you know a lot of the same drum beats because they're the traditional drum beats, and you can make music together with, you know, a whole crowd of 150 people playing on a baseball diamond together at one of these fife and drum events, which, you know, it's an amazing thing.
That's phenomenal. Yes.
Yeah, well, that's all part of the community that makes it such a, you know, such an important thing in my life for sure. But there's also the element that, you know, it's kind of designed for the people, for the crowd around you. You know, you could watch that happening from the outside and, you know, see it as a concert or something. You know, it's really designed for everybody. It's community music. It's folk music in a lot of ways, you know. So if you see a fife and drum corps in a parade, you know, that is, I don't know where I'm going with that, but if you, it's something that's more designed for public consumption, and it fits all of those roles really well. A lot of the times when I've been teaching smaller fife and drum corps in our area, just helping out, you know, you run into a lot of issues with high school kids that, you know, oh, sorry, we have a band competition that day. Oh, sorry, we have a band competition that day. And there's not a whole lot of public performance once you get into those types of groups that you can play in for a long time. There's a lot of emphasis on competition, which competition is great. I think it's great for people pushing themselves forward and, you know, and groups forward to really strive for goals. But if the public never really gets to see it, they never get to understand it. So, you know, it's internal versus external. And I think that our mutual friend Hal Gill would agree that there's an element here that needs to be for the public as well. And that's something that I think Fife and Drum does really well.
Yes, I agree. Well, and you had mentioned your podcast earlier. Would you like to tell a little bit more about that, or is that going too deep?
No, sure. Yeah, that's totally fine. Our podcast, so it's we're all Fife and Drum people on it, actually. The hosts are Brian Watkinson, who's he's a bass drummer, plays with the group. We actually play together in the group Grand Republic Fife and Drum Corps. And Brendan Mason, who he's a big-time instructor all around New England area for individuals and for groups. And he's a great friend, and between the three of us, we interview a lot of, you know, people in both in Fife and Drum, outside of Fife and Drum, musicians from all kinds of walks of life. We've probably done about maybe 30 or 40 interviews at this point, but we keep going with it just to try to gain some of that wisdom from, you know, and spread that knowledge that the people have kind of gained over the years, to try to, you know, help the community understand more, help outsiders understand what the community is, and, you know, just really try to spread the good word.
That's fantastic. And I heard that Hal may be a guest on your podcast coming up as another Fifer out there in the community.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we really want to talk about one of his goals is to amplify through the noise, right? So amplifying the message through the noise. And I think that, you know, thoughts like that are very, very important to kind of figure out, especially today, you know, with all the social media. I'm not the best at social media, to tell you the truth. We have too many irons and too many fires to focus on that kind of side of things. But, you know, it's, you get a lot of messaging from a lot of different places and with a lot of different agendas, you know, and so how to kind of sort out what the messaging that you're trying to find, or how to find truth in that, you know, is hard. And that goes into all kinds of other things, which we don't need to get into, but, but, you know, like amplifying the good within Fife and Drum, you know, how runs the Facebook page, Fife and Drum Fans, you know, and that's what he tries to do with that. So, I think it's going to be interesting to kind of explore that topic a little bit within music, you know.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I always enjoy my conversations with Hal. We were just checking in yesterday. So much thanks to Hal for amplifying the good and bringing great guests like yourself into my life. You know, because we've met, I've had a more enriched path in my guests and some of the content that I've been able to share with our listeners. And that is just priceless. And I have a new friend. Now I feel like I have two friends that I haven't really met yet, but I met you now, and here we are. And I just think that there's something really magical in all of what you're doing. What was the name of your podcast again?
So it's called the Bottom of the Glass Podcast, and there's like three or four of those out there, but we're the one with a couple of drumsticks. So if you see the icon, that's us. The other ones I think are about drinking or something, but ours is not.
Well, that's good to know. At least the listeners out there might be like, hey, I want to check that out. Where do I find it? And well, and I like to ask people that come on the air, the segment that we're doing is for a segment called Live Your Masterpiece, where you're being inspired and inspiring others and living your masterpiece. And I can tell for sure you're doing that. I mean, lots of irons in the fire, quite literally. I like to ask my guests, what brings you joy? What brings you the most joy? And that could be anything.
Well, yeah. It's a very simple question for me to answer. My kids and my family bring me the most joy in the world. But from another standpoint, just to add something that hopefully almost all of your guests answer that way, but if they that some other things are just getting to share what this community and what this music has really done for me in my life, and try to help, spread, as we said again and again, spread the good word about this and really introduce people to something that they might not have known about.
Yes, indeed. Well, a lot of them do answer that very similarly to you. Kids and family first, if they have kids or a wife.
Right.
And I think that's a wonderful answer. And on the heels of all that we've talked about today, as I know you're a very busy man, I wanted to see if there's other points that you'd like to touch on before we complete our interview. Is there something that we've left out, something that's a message that you would like to share that hasn't gotten a chance to get out there yet?
I'm probably going to kick myself later for saying that I can't think of anything. There's so much within, somebody's passion and somebody's life that all you can do is scratch the surface. And that's what we learn when we talk to people on our podcast. But, I would say if you're interested, find a local Fife and Rim Corps, see how you can support them. See if it's something that maybe they need somebody to, maybe they need money, maybe they need players, maybe they need somebody who understands a performance venue that they might be welcomed at. But see how you can support that if you're interested in, and it all works like that. When everybody gets together and takes a little piece, then it all works together. So that's the goal.
Yes. Well said. I think that if you have forgotten anything, we're going to keep in touch, and I'd like to have you back on. So you won't have to kick yourself. You can just say, okay, I need to make some notes, because I think we just have scratched the surface today. Just take some notes, and we'll have you back on, because I'm quite fascinated and impressed. Not only are you a wonderful, well-spoken, charismatic person, but you obviously have a strong passion for preservation and what feels right in the world and how to get more of that happening. So I'd love to have you back on anytime.
Well, thank you so much for that. And I would love to continue these conversations and see where things go, it's something worth talking about. And I had a lot of fun. So thank you very much for having me on.
Absolutely. And I will mention at the end that this was previously recorded on June 23rd of 2022. However, it will be posted on Internet Archives and on our KSKQ website. So if someone is stumbling upon this later, you know when it was recorded and that this will be available for your audience, our audience, to listen to again in the future, in case anybody just tuned in and missed some of it. We're talking with Dave Loyal of Loyal Drums. And Dave, would you like to let us know how we can find out more about you as we're parting?
Sure. Yeah. So loyaldrums.com and on Instagram and Facebook at Loyal Drums. Pretty easy to find.
Loyal, just like it sounds.
Yep.
L-O-Y-A-L, yeah. Right?
That's correct. Just like the word. Yep.
Just like the word. Again, thank you so much for joining us this morning to share in your passion and your gifts. And we really look forward to having you back on the air someday soon.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
was our interview with Dave Loyal, and there was a clip of Dave from the Old Guard performance for the United States military.